Welcome to the Get Hooked podcast, companion piece for the six-part documentary series exploring the health benefits of fishing and nature for everybody. This isn't your dad's fishing show. My chat today is with Nicole, who's not always taken seriously when she tells people she shoots her own food, but she has for about 15 years, and it's given her a deeper understanding of food, nature, and the science that goes hand in hand with it. Disclaimer, fishing is obviously a very popular sport among men, but the world knows that. In this series, we're trying to shine a light on other humans' experiences with fishing and nature. That is not to leave men out of the conversation, no. To the men, we invite you to continue to make fishing and nature a safe space for anyone who has never seen themselves on the cover of a fishing magazine, and welcome. This episode of the Get Hooked podcast is produced by Bone Vault Inc. in association with AMI and OutTV, and funded by the Bell Fund and Ontario Creates, and is hosted by actor, writer, and fishing-adjacent producer, Heidi Lynch. That's me. Let's chat with Nicole. Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
Thanks so much for chatting with me today for the Get Hooked podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I came across your Instagram account, shootinggirl_with_un_afro, because of Amy Flyfish. I don't remember exactly how. I was like on her account, and the anglers in my fishing show were raving about Amy Flyfish. And then I was like, damn, she looks cool. I think your content's really beautiful and exciting. And, you know, it's not all about gender, but I would say if I was going to be interested in shooting content, it would probably be from a female perspective. There's just a different energy to your account. I don't feel alienated from it, which typically guns have made me feel a bit, but I had already had some curiosity around, you know, the ethics of me going to a grocery store and buying food and being so disconnected from the meat that I'm eating. And I am a meat eater and I enjoy that, but it was really cool to find your account and find someone who, I'm sure not every shoot you do, you're hunting your own food, but does do that practice. And then also the continuity on your blog of showing like recipes that you have used to cook the meat that you've gotten that day. And I just found it very captivating and interesting.
Oh, thank you. No, that's good to hear. And I think, and that's a lot of the reason why I did it and started the brand, Shooting Girl with an Afro, which has become a brand over the past 3 or 4 years, unwittingly. Like, I didn't actually mean for it to become the brand that it has, but I basically met someone at a show long before anyone kind of knew me, and they wanted to be able to find me. I made the account because I kept saying to people, just search the girl with the Afro, or the girl that hunts for the Afro, or something like that. And I kept saying that. And then I was like, I actually just need to make that account and then people will know.
Yeah.
And that literally was it, because I knew the first time I went to a shooting show, a game fair, I was, for the first day that I was there, I was the only Black person. And this is a show that ran over 3 days and had about 150,000 visitors.
Wow.
And I was like, you'll be able to find me. and it didn't make me feel uneasy or anything like that, because I was used to live in the countryside and not see many Black faces. But it just made me realize, well, you know, if people are talking to me, people want to know more about me and why I'm doing what I'm doing. So I need to give them a way to find me. And I wanted to reach people that were interested and thought, oh, well, I've thought about growing my own veg, but I'm not sure if I'd get it right. And I'd be like, well, here's a picture of my fabulous veg patches, which I don't have anymore. let me talk you through the not the do's and don'ts, because I'm not a qualified horticulturist or anything like that, but what I did right and what I did wrong, and, you know, go with it and see what happens for you. And it was the same with shooting. It's like, okay, well, this is how I started. This is what I do some days. This is what goes wrong a lot of the time, which you don't think someone would say when they're holding a very, very powerful weapon.
But
things will go wrong. It's like any craft, any hobby, any skill.
Exactly. Right? You know, we're human, and it's a human made piece of equipment. You know, equipment can fail. Humans can forget things. It's okay to admit that. I didn't want my account to be perfect because I'm not perfect, and that's not how I wanted my account to be a true reflection of who I am.
Well, nobody is perfect, right? You know, and that's, you know, when human beings are able to admit that we're flawed and we make mistakes, that knowledge sharing is almost more valuable than all of the accounts you could Google and find all the right ways to do everything. Who's talking about the little mishaps so that someone else doesn't have to go through the same thing?
Exactly. And also, so it's relatable. You know, one of the things that I found through as I became more well known is, and more people would stop and talk to me and tell me their stories, and they weren't as experienced as I was as a shooter, but I still learn from them, you know, through their experiences. Oh, that's not happened to me before. Oh, okay, that's good to know, good to look out for, because, you know, we're constantly learning no matter how long you've been doing it. So
yeah, that was kind of one of the most interesting parts of making Get Hooked, the Fishing Doc series, was basically from my side as a producer, I tried to find people that came from different experiences in the world who could fish together for a day and bond over that communal knowledge, and watching the more skilled guides in the episodes be so jazzed and excited about angling and fishing that this free exchange of knowledge, and it not being like you're paying me this for this, and you're just watching human beings like I just do think that the outdoors are going to save humanity. And I feel silly saying it, but I'm like, it reminds us that we are a community for the love of whatever anyone believes out there.
There were human beings long before there were houses.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
You know, we lived in caves, we lived in trees, we lived in little stick houses on the beach, you know.
Yeah. And we had to depend on each other and share skills and knowledge and take care of each other. I'm really interested about, I mean, I know you've had many different careers and still have many interesting careers and business owner. I did read somewhere that you're an ex-dancer, and I was curious what the trajectory was that got you into shooting.
So I still dance from time to time, a little salsa. Nice. When I have the time, it's in my blood. I can't help it. It will never go. It will never leave me. So when I met my son's father, I was 21, and I moved to Norway. He's Norwegian, and his family own a dairy farm. That was my first proper introduction to farming, the countryside. Even though it was in a foreign country, I've since learned that a lot of the practices are the same.
Cool.
And that really opened my eyes and my soul to the outdoors. You know, I was like, oh, you know, I've spoken to my parents since, and, you know, my mum's like, yeah, you're a country girl. You know, back in the Caribbean, we were country folk. That's where we lived, in the country, in the jungle, and it really kind of like, I just felt at home in the mountains, on the farm, driving the tractor, you know, even though I need to kill myself.
That's how you learn.
That was my first kind of like awakening, if you like. That was also my first introduction to firearms. So they had to shoot the feral cats on the farm, and rats, because of just disease. They would just be spreading disease. So and they'd have like sheep heads and things kind of hanging around the barn. So I was still dancing at that point. And then 4 years later, I met someone else and moved out into the countryside in the UK. Mm-hmm. And we owned 4 acres of land. We were surrounded by farmland. The nearest house was like a 5-10 minute walk away. And that was the true kind of like, okay, wow, this is it. You know, looking after the land, seeing what happens when you plant certain things, what animals come, growing my own veg, failing miserably the first year, but and shooting, you know, standing in the trees and literally saying, I'll be back in a minute, going outside and bang bang, and coming back an hour later with dinner, you know. It was a very new world. But
I do you remember the first time that you went shooting and brought home your dinner? And what was the animal? And do you remember what you made?
So the first time, I won't include the first time that I actually shot, because okay. that was something called a driven shoot, which I don't do that much of. And it's something that I'm hoping to find people that can find a way to make it more wild, shall we say, in the future. Yeah. So that's another story. But the first time I actually would say I hunted, you know, went out and harvested my own wild meat, was on pigeons. I remember the gun I was using. It was a Beretta Silver Pigeon, 32-inch long barrel, 12 bore. And yeah, and I think I probably shot only three pigeons that day. Went back to the bin, breasted them. That was strange because they were still warm.
Yeah.
So that was a new experience of like, oh, I'm putting my hand inside a dead animal and it's still warm.
Yeah.
But had the most delicious dinner. I can't remember. It was in the winter. I can't remember if I did a stew or if I did it as a roast. So pan-fried pigeon breast, but with like roast potatoes. And it yeah. would have been one of the two, because they're basically the only two things that I eat in the winter.
Yeah.
That, oh, and cottage pie, but it wouldn't really work without a mincer.
Yeah.
But I was hooked. I was hooked from day one.
That, even you speaking to the fact that the pigeon was warm is interesting, because I'm just so used to going to a grocery store and I pick up cold meat and you have to let the meat get to room temperature before you, like, it's just so, what you're talking about and describing just feels like this full circle moment, this full cycle of like actually cognitively being aware of what you're eating and like having a moment of gratitude for this animal that, you know, and it's, yeah, it's really interesting. One of the episodes on Get Hooked, this man, Frank, takes them kayak fishing for pike. And he obviously does hunting. He does the moose hunt. He's a Cree man who lives near Ottawa. And we've developed this friendship, and I love Frank. I can't say enough good things about him. But he just started sending me some like unadulterated hunting photos one day. And I was like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing. But I was so fascinated, you know, I leaned in, but also his approach to doing that is so holistic, and he is grateful for this animal. And, you know, they use the entire body, they share it, and they, you know, it's, I don't know. It's just, I'm like really feeling like a pretty intense interest, which is funny because I don't really have a desire to go fishing. I have more of one after making the show and watching them all fish and be so nice to each other. But I have more of a like a sparkly, like I'm actually going to do this about hunting.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I would love to fish. And speaking of Amy, she's actually coming to visit me this weekend and stay over. I'm going to take her out shooting. And one day she'll be taking me out fishing. So I only want to fish to eat, though. That's the thing. So I've had people offer to take me out in the past, and I've just said no, because I'm not interested in sitting by a lake and catching something and throwing it back. I'm interested in wild hunting. You know, even if I go out and don't catch anything that day, it doesn't matter. That's part of hunting. Yeah. But no, you're right. It is. It's respect for the animal. Respect for the quarry is one of the key things in the shooting code in the UK. And, you know, not all animals, for me, you know, I'm not at that skill set yet, and I don't have the space in my home now where I live now and the time to be able to use every part of the animal all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But for instance, you know, with pigeons, it would be a case of, especially when I lived at the farm, you know, I'm taking the breasts, but then I'd go outside and walk a quarter of a mile to a little foxhole that I knew. And I just leave all the carcasses there. Next morning, they'd be gone. And it's that circle of life of like, that fox is going to, you know, pick off every last little bit of meat, feed its little cubs. You know, one day it's going to be gone because of predator control, you know, but in the meantime, whilst it's here, it may as well live its best life.
Definitely.
And the feeling of being grateful of, you know, when you're opening a pigeon, and sometimes the crop sometimes I'll actually open the crop to see where what this pigeon has been eating, especially if it's a farmer that I'm doing pest control, so I can report back mm-hmm. and say, you know, I've shot 30 pigeons today. Most of them had rapeseed plant in their crop, so I know that they're off your land. A couple of them had wheat, you know, so it's interesting to see where they've been feeding, so you can report back to the farmer if you're doing pest control, but also because I know what's going into my body, if that makes sense. What right. they're eating is going into their meat, is going into their body, and that's what's going into my body. I don't know. It's a very ancestral feeling to it. I feel like,
yeah, I mean, that just, it's, I know, like, I feel like I sound really simple being so amazed by this, but I've just been such a city dweller my entire life yeah. that, you know, we're Googling like what we think, what horrible things our meat is eating that's going into yeah. our bodies with no sort of like intrinsic my eyes to my stomach knowledge that exactly. you're talking about. That is just really interesting. I love that you, when you described going to these shows and events for shooting, that you were aware that you were the only Black woman in a crowd and that it didn't deter you. And I know, you know, stereotyping is also one of these primal human things that our brains just do. But I'm curious, you know, if someone was listening to this who is a part of a marginalized group that's not normally advertised as being part of the shooting community, like, what would you say to them about your experience and about what you think their experience might be?
I would say, don't listen to everything you see in the news.
Yeah,
definitely. Don't listen to everything that you read on a leaflet that might be handed out to you in the street. Get out there and see it for yourself. In my life in the UK, I've been here since I was 3 years old. I'm now 42 almost. I have never felt more welcomed into a community as I have the countryside and shooting community ever. As a female and as a Black female, you know, there are two things there. And I'm openly bi as well. It's not something that I necessarily shout about because it's just who I am, but it's also something yeah. that's not affected my experience.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think just get out there. I think whether you're, it doesn't matter your level of interest in shooting as such, because there are so many aspects to the field sports community that don't involve holding a gun.
Yeah.
You know, but all of them involve spending time outdoors in the countryside. You know, dress properly, dress appropriately for where you're going and for the weather.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I'd say, especially if you're Black and we don't like the cold. Okay.
Dress warm.
Dress sensibly, but get out there. You know, you'd be amazed what you'll see. Go to the shows, talk to people, ask questions. You know, the typical stereotype that is often put out there is of a wealthy, elderly, white male. And there are lots of them in the shooting community, that, you know, and that's okay. And there are also lots of young white males and older, there are several older Black males in the community, both from a working class background like me and some who are barons and, you know, so and lords. There's a massive mix, and you won't really see that unless you get out there for yourself. And the countryside is just, it's amazing what you can see at dusk sat still behind some camouflage for an hour and a half.
Totally. And it, you know, it harkens back to what I chatted about with Amy and also sort of the point of Get Hooked. I feel like that world is the antithesis to the internet darkness where all the trolls and the worst things happen. You know, it's that finding a community where you already have a common shared thing. you don't have to like force an awkward conversation and not understand each other. You can get to know each other through the passion of outdoors, the passion of shooting. And then you do find common ground. And you remind yourself that you're an animal. Like, we're not computers, you know, we spend so much time sitting behind screens and whatever. But these hobbies that really like just remind you physiologically that you're an animal. And that we are a community and we all need to work together.
And it's funny because there are schemes that are set up now with, like, you know, government schemes where young children from schools are going off to old people's homes. It's like, we don't have these communities anymore. And, you know, some kids don't have grandparents. They're not learning. Go to the field sports community, you know, go to a shoot day, go to a gun club, and you will see, as par for the course, 70-year-old men with their wives sometimes, 40-year-old black women, 50-year-old Indian men, 30-year-old white men, 20-year-old white girls, you know, all together, all chatting, all just instantly being human and being open with each other, irrelevant of what each other looks like, irrelevant of age, sex, anything. It's just... It doesn't even come into the equation. And in fact, there's only been once where, maybe once or twice actually, in 15 years of me shooting, where someone has pointed out that I'm female, not black. They might have thought it, but it's never been pointed out. But it was in a positive light. It was, you know, I was going onto the marsh to go wildfowl, and they were coming off the marsh, and it was getting dark, and I was getting my, you know, waterproofs on. They're like, "Oh, you're a lady wildfowler," and I said, "Yeah, yeah." They're like, "Part of this wildfowling club," and I said, "Yeah." "Oh my goodness, we've got a lady gun!" They were so excited, and these are two men in their 70s.
"We've got a lady gun."
You know, they were just so, because they were like, it was almost like, "Yes, we are reaching that next generation, that different audience."
Right.
And if we don't reach and show them the beauty of this sport and how we look after the countryside as part of it, it will die out.
It was
wonderful.
It will. That's mm-hmm. the thing. And that I don't want to poop on female only initiatives in the world. They totally serve a purpose.
Yeah.
And I mean, the WNBA is, I'm just living for the women's basketball right now. I joined a basketball team. I go with, it's women only, and it is just my shining yeah. light in my life right now.
Yeah.
But they miss the mark sometimes in terms of like, but how do we connect, you know? And I, you know, Demisha from Brown Girl Outdoor World in episode one, the guide there, she has expressed to me before that, like, she tried to first join like a female angling group.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually experienced more, negative energy towards her from that than going with a bunch of men fishing. And groups are so important for people mm-hmm. to get to come together and understand each other's experiences and that same experience. But like, I just don't see things evolving to a good place unless we're able to find these activities where it doesn't matter, where people from all different experiences share something. Because living in an echo chamber of your experience is obviously incredibly dangerous, and we're seeing, the fruits of all of that. I just can't say enough good things about what you're sharing on your blog and your Instagram. And, it's so cool. I think it's just so cool that you're going to have like men following your account, wanting to get tips from you. It just does good in the world.
It's interesting that you say that about her experience. That's exactly the same experience I've had with ladies groups. And I think it's because I'm quite a tomboy. That doesn't You think that all women in shooting would automatically be tomboys because it's been heavily, it's a male dominated sport. It still is.
Right.
But that's not the case. You know, one of my good friends in the sport is like the most glamorous Barbie Disney princess you'll ever meet. Blonde, gorgeous, nails done, hair did, makeup fully done every single day, no matter what she's doing, if she's going out deer stalking or if she's going to a clay shooting competition. She can outshoot most of the men.
Shooting girl Barbie. I feel like I would have wanted to have her as a child.
Chelsea, you heard it first here. Shooting girl Barbie, okay? She's more like badass Disney princess, okay. Moana with blonde hair. And she doesn't, you know, she's not part of these ladies groups. She just same as me. She just does her thing. And so there are girls out there that are like that. There are girls out there that are like me. And I think I agree with you. The ladies groups serve a purpose when they're run by the right people for the right reasons. I think that's a key thing. So, you know, there are women out there that are really nervous around men and maybe don't want to be, but they're not there yet. So, you know, but they do want to get into the sport in some way. Great. It serves a purpose for them. But when people are running these groups, not to help women get into the sport, but to for their own profit or for their own status, for awards, for recognition, for the wrong reasons, or when they start for the right reasons and then go off track, then it becomes dangerous because it becomes clicky. It becomes, oh, are you a member yet? Oh, if you're not, then I can't talk to you. You know, oh, have you got our special membership vest? Or have you got our, you know, it becomes too clicky. It becomes mean girls. It becomes expensive. People start to get priced out of the sport because they feel like, oh, I need to go to, they've got this event and then this event and then this event next week. And each one's £55 and that one's £175 and that one, you know, and like you say, it becomes an echo chamber because they're trying to keep up with everyone, like we do in normal lives, you know, keep up with the Joneses and not realizing that there's plenty of other events out there where women are a part of it, but not the only part of it, that may be cheaper, that may be free, and they can have just as good experiences. I'm glad that I'm reaching a female audience that, on one of the channels that I, one of the shooting channels that I was on YouTube, that kind of rocketed me up in the public eye in terms of the shooting community.
Yeah.
And then I learned, oh my goodness, there's like 15-year-old girls coming up to me wanting to have a selfie because they've seen, you know, they weren't interested in watching this program that their dad was watching before, but now they've seen me on it. Not only are they watching it, but they're getting into shooting. They want to get their own gun. Great. I'm glad that I'm reaching those audiences. But I don't want to be an advocate for women because I'm a woman.
Yeah.
I want to be an advocate for the outdoors.
But I also, it is like really interesting because it is, you know, Gina Davis and her Institute on Film and Television, all their studies are about see it, be it. And it is just that statistical thing where sometimes our brains are so simple. We can never imagine ourselves doing something until we see someone like us do it. And then we think it's possible. The last thing I wanted to quickly touch on is like, have you always been a good cook? How do you come up with your recipes? And does it depend on what you've foraged and what you've hunted? And like, do you pre-plan your meal before you hunt? Or what are your steps?
That's interesting. I don't pre-plan my meals before I hunt. Definitely not. So I plan the hunt around the weather where I can. And also around my freezer. It depends on how empty my freezer is. You know, if it's getting really, really low, then I'm like, okay, I need to do a deer stalk because that's the quickest way to fill a freezer is with a whole deer carcass.
Right. And do you take it apart yourself and everything after?
Yeah. So, and again, for me, I feel like that's how I started deer stalking because that's been a lot shorter. I think I've only been doing that for about 4 or 5 years. But friends would bring me carcasses that they'd shot and be like, oh, I've run out of space in the chiller. Do you want it? Knowing or assuming, I suppose, that I would break it down myself or, you know, they didn't think about that part. They just gave me the carcass.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I could do this. Just taught myself to do it. I didn't even watch any YouTube videos or anything. I just did it. And then a friend of mine who actually teaches it at Westminster College, a couple of years later showed me how to do it properly. And I realized how much meat I had been wasting beforehand.
Right.
But then at that point I was like, I keep preaching to people that if you can eat meat, you should be able to shoot it. you know, you should be able to go back to our ancestors, go back to tribal life, go back to how some people are living in Europe and other countries around the world now who live on their own land and they have a pig or they have a goat like we do in the Caribbean, and the goat gets, once it can't produce any more milk, you know, gets slaughtered and eaten. And I thought, you're preaching to everyone else about this, so you need to learn how to do it. So I did. And then obviously once I knew how to, once my friend had shown me how to kind of break it down and butcher it up properly, that's when I really got interested in cooking it. Before that, it was a case of necessity. Yeah. This is food. I'm going hunting. Instinct, you know, human nature, rah, hunt, meat, done. There was no finesse to it. Whereas now it's a case of, oh yeah, I need to get the fillet out if I can from inside, because that's like a really good bit. Yeah. And oh, I need to be really careful cutting this bit because it's the loin. I need to cook that well. Okay, I can put that in the fridge because I'm going to have that tomorrow. You know, so it's more understanding of which cuts fit which meals, which cuts I prefer the taste of, how I want to cut it. Some people make lots of sausages and burgers. Yeah. I prefer not to. I prefer to have big joints and roast, and then use the leftovers over several days and give them to my dog, because my dog eats everything that I hunt as
That's
well.
So good. What's your dog's name?
Rigby.
Oh, Rigby. Yeah. So sweet.
He's a little, I can hear his ears pricking up as I say that. he's a darling. And he eats everything that I hunt as well. So even more reason now, I've only had him for 10 months, even more reason now for me to hunt, because it's feeding both of us. But I used to be a very, very bad cook. Very, very bad indeed. I don't know how my son is alive. if I'm honest with some of the stuff that I used to cook, but I loved cooking. I just didn't know how to do it. And I'm telling you now, hunting has helped me to become a better cook, definitely, because I wanted to respect the quarry. Yeah. I wanted to not just, like, I don't know, throw away half of what I'd shot and cooked because it just tasted like crap because I hadn't cooked it properly, right, or because it was just too so chewy I couldn't get my teeth through it.
That is a really interesting thing. I don't mean to interrupt, but like the amount of food waste that a lot of city dwelling people, like myself included, I'm speaking about my household, the amount of groceries that do get wasted when you're a couple of two and you're buying.
Yeah.
And I know that if I had that deep of a connection to what I was throwing out, I would not be throwing it out. If I'd spent 100%. All day trying to hunt a deer and I had taken the carcass apart and stored it beautifully and filleted it perfectly and put it in my fridge, in my freezer, I'm not just going to throw half of it out, you know?
No way. No way. It's a different, it's given me chills just thinking about it, thinking about the process and how I feel when I'm doing it. It's such a different experience. You're so much more connected, you know, from the, like you say, sometimes it can be all day or depending on what land you're on. Sometimes it'd be a morning stalk. You're getting up at 3-4 a.m. to travel somewhere to then be out stalking before the sunrise, to then grolicking in the field, bleeding out. You know, that process could be 6 hours before you even got it home.
Right.
Then you might not shoot anything in the morning. So you might actually go home, go back out in the evening. You know, it's such a, it's not a chore. That's the difference. It's still beautiful going out and seeing the world come to life, you know, seeing the barn owl just fly past you because it hasn't seen you in your camo, like, you know, you could touch it, it's that close. Yeah. And all of that experience, and then your heart rate, controlling your heart rate with the excitement of seeing the deer and going, oh, there's a shot, there's one, you know, it's the right sex, it's in season, it's in the right position, it's safe, okay, go. And then the moment that you have with the deer once you've caught up to it, or, you know, checking it over, you know, not just going, woohoo, I got it, and chopping its head off and taking it, you know, chucking over your shoulder. It's a case of like, okay, I'm actually going to check you over. And, you know, for instance, I shot a lame deer recently. He was very lame. Mm. And that's the reason I took him, because he couldn't even hobble the 3 or 4 meters to the female that was in front of him in mid mating season. Mm. to mate with her. He couldn't reach her. He was, his tongue was going. He was desperate to get to her to mate, and he couldn't. Beautiful, healthy, 6-point stag in every other way. He was probably, I would say, about 5 years old, 6 years old, and couldn't even reach her. She was literally just stood there like, come on,
all flirty.
I'm here. Like, yes. Literally, and I thought, he needs to be put out of his misery. So I forgot all other, you know, deer. But then, you know, I find him and it's like, okay, you're checking him over. Why has he got this injury? Ah, and then you find the injury and you're thinking through the story of like, oh, I wonder how he got it. Did he get hit by a car, clipped? You know, did he get stuck in a fence for a little bit? Did he, you know, you're taking that time with that animal whilst you're checking it over. You're looking for battle scars, you're looking for all sorts of things. And, you know, once you've grolloped and you've opened up as well, you're checking the insides, you're seeing how healthy that animal is, what it's eaten, what a good life or not it's had, you know, is there any disease? There's so much connection before it even gets to your freezer. Mm-hmm. And then also, it's going to sound strange, and this is something, and this is the reason why I hate people that, or I hate the rhetoric that goes with trophy hunting from, you know, people that, oh, well, they're doing it for this. Oh, yeah, just so you can get this big trophy. No, you know, and sometimes those trophies, sometimes we keep them, sometimes we don't. I don't like the word trophy. Yeah. I have some of my heads from stags, but it's actually the memory of the experience of the stalk.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I'm getting the meat out of the freezer, I've labeled it and I'm like, okay, that's the Chinese water deer, February. Where did I? Oh, that was that time when. And it's like, and you're literally reliving the memories every time I get something out of the freezer and I cook it, and then you eat it and you go, okay, this tastes a bit different this time. Oh, that's because that was the one that I did with that friend and we left it hanging for a bit longer. Or, you know, there's so much that you understand, so much more that you understand about your food.
Yeah.
When you hunt it yourself and butcher it yourself, I will never go back to not doing this.
Yeah, I love that. It's interesting too, because obviously there are, you know, not great people in every single community all over the planet. And you do see that thing on, you know, the jokes about how like on Tinder, the guy's holding up their fish or their, you know, their trophy or whatever. But the people that I've actually been pre-interviewing and chatting with for the last 3 years, any angling enthusiast, outdoor nature hunting enthusiast, they actually have such a holistic mindset about the experience. Sustainability is top of mind. Best practices are top of mind. They know more about the environment and the rivers and the land that they're existing on than anyone who's criticizing the sport, you know? And it's been really interesting because I, you know, didn't have such a interest in it before and maybe would have thought like, oh, why would anyone do that? It's essential. Why are we going to grocery stores and buying tons of meat that we don't know where it's grown? And, you know, interesting. I when Faye, who's in the fishing show, was filming Andor, Star Wars Andor, I went with her to Scotland. They're doing the first season. And she was going a little stir crazy because they were filming such long hours and she was cooped up in this hotel room. So she went and bought herself a fishing rod and just went to this little stream like near the hotel in Inverary. And her castmates were so cute. They didn't fish, but they just came out to like watch her do it because she's really interested in it. And when someone's really interested, you know, it's fun to hear about. And then they all had like one day off coming up, but they had no time to plan an activity or anything to do. So I found this archery teacher and I signed us up for this archery day. I have a very bad vision in my left eye, like really bad. And I was like, I'm going to be horrible at this, but it's an activity. They're all running around pretending they're like Star Wars people. Like, you know, it's a cool, fun thing to do, whatever. I won. We went, my bad eye was closed. I won. And that, honestly, that moment, I was like, And then just ruminating about this, trying to hunt and like feeling that if I'm going to be eating meat, I should have the experience of killing an animal from A to Z. You know, I want that. I think I'm part of my soul is craving it clearly. But
so you're right-handed.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. We can teach you to shoot. You close your left eye. The see? Got it.
I was just practicing with my eye shut. Do you keep your, this is so dumb. Do you close an eye? No.
Everybody's different.
Okay.
It depends on your eyesight. So for me, yes, I close one eye. And it's my left, and I'm the same as you. And my left is my worst eye; it doesn't focus properly anyway, so it's perfect. I am slightly ambidextrous, so officially I could shoot left-handed, but I choose right, and it's better because I close my left eye. I know people, a couple of people, a handful of people that leave both eyes open, and I know people that are, they have to close their right eye. I know people that have to wear a patch because they can't close one eye, so they wear a patch or they wear glasses with
a I wore one as a child, you know. So I would be totally willing.
So yeah, everybody's different. It all depends on you, but generally I would say 90% of people close one eye.
And what would you recommend if I'm starting like point blank, would it be like clay pigeons first? Like what would you recommend as an entry activity to test out my theory that I may want to do this?
I would actually not necessarily recommend shotguns first. I would recommend only because, and I love all types of shooting. Shotgun, I feel personally, and there'll be people screaming at me out there that saying that I'm wrong, but it's my opinion. I feel like shotgun takes more skill and more time. And depend on the person you are, if you are someone that is quite competitive with yourself and could berate yourself quite a lot, the shotgun side of things can become quite frustrating quite quickly. Okay. And also, depending on where you go and which gun you use, there's quite a kick. So I remember the pain of shotgun shooting long before I remember or long after.
Yeah.
I forget everything else. So I would actually say air rifle.
Okay.
Would be the best way.
I think my father-in-law has one, actually. I think he just got one.
Amazing. Yeah, so that is where I would actually advise people to start. There's no kick. It's not as dangerous a weapon, I suppose. And you can still do target practice. You can put little targets out, a cardboard box with a drawn circle on it, bottom of the garden, you know, where bottom of the garden, depends how big your garden is. You know, you can join a club and do rifle shooting. It's a lot less invasive, I would say. You know, it's quieter.
Yeah.
It's more peaceful. There is still skill involved, you know, in terms of quietening your heart rate and your breath. Mm-hmm.
But that would be a good starting point to just feel out the mechanics of the steps of what needs to happen.
Exactly. And the safety aspect of holding a firearm. You know, you're not waving it around like you are with a shotgun, so it's a bit less intimidating. Mm-hmm. And it's still something that you can jump quite easily to shooting game, so you can still shoot pigeons with an air rifle. The lands that I have permission on nearby me now to shoot pigeons, I shoot with a shotgun, and the guy that introduced me to that farmer, he shoots with an air rifle. He doesn't have a shotgun license yet. So you can do both. You know, I can shoot the birds in the sky, he can shoot them on the ground in the crops with the air rifle. And actually he's less likely to, well, he's a lot less likely to find anything in the meat,
right?
That he has to cut out,
right?
So you know, and then rabbits as well, you know, it's a great way to, on a golf course for instance, if you wanted to go and help out a golf course to keep their rabbit numbers down because they destroy golf courses, again, it's a great thing to use. It's a lot quieter. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
So it's a good starting point.
Cool. Thank you so much, Nicole, for that amazing chat and for the upcoming shooting lesson you don't yet know that you will be giving me. If you like to check out Get Hooked, the documentary series, which inspired this podcast, you can do that in Canada on AMI TV, AMI Plus, and on OutTV.com in Canada, the US, Australia, and New Zealand. You can get those through Apple TV and Amazon Prime. On Outflix.com in the UK and Ireland, and on Outflix via Alenti in Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and Finland. Lastly, fish on, shoot on, or tree on. Whatever you do to get your nature kicks, just get outside and enjoy it. Thanks.